Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and my favorite sex ed class I've ever been to was one where Courtney Trouble fisted Sarah Stardust in front of a whole bunch of people, and Sarah squirted on the front row, and it was so wild. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I can't follow that up. So I'm just gonna leave it at that.
I have a question for you, actually. I don't know if you would know this, but, like, isn't it kind of a liability concern if someone squirts at an event like that? Like, couldn't there theoretically be, like, STI transmissions and stuff? Aren't people gonna be mad about that?
Yeah, I'd feel some type of way about that, to be honest. But...
yeah. So anyway, I bring this up because we're talking about sex ed today. It feels timely. Folks are going back to school. There's a sex ed crisis where I live, so that's fun. What did you learn about sex in school, Bex, if anything?
So, we had a health class that we went to that was, like, a lot of sex ed. It wasn't just, like, one day. So that was cool. But it was still mostly, like, learning barrier methods and learning, like, STIs and things along those lines. And then there were also units in that class on, like, healthy eating and, like, drugs, they're bad. And, like, See, the thing about my health class is that they scheduled me for it during 8th period senior year.
That's not
happening. And they scheduled me for lunch 7th period of senior year.
Yikes.
So I vaguely recall there was a sex ed curriculum. And the thing is, I used to leave school early to go to Barnes & Noble and read sex ed books. So, like, it's kind of the same thing.
Kind of, yeah. A little bit less structured.
Yeah, that's fine. More focus on things that feel good, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, my story is similar. I took a health class in grade 8 and grade 7. That was, like, a unit in gym class. And I remember that there was one sentence on the clitoris, and I was quite surprised that that was even in there. And then when I went to high school, again, health was only a unit in phys ed class, and I didn't end up taking any phys ed classes because I had asthma, so I got a doctor's note because I had exercise-induced asthma. So they let me do a different credit instead of a gym credit, but that meant that I got no sex ed at all. Which is kind of a problem that people can do that. And also, like, if folks are not able to take a gym class for some reason, they should still have access to sex ed information. Like, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, the, like, first ever sex ed talk, like, when they have the talk with you in, like, middle school or whatever, they sent the paperwork home to my mom, and my mom was like, you know, being who she is, I think she sat me down and asked if I was ready for school to give me the talk. I believe I had had it with her already. And I was like, no, I don't think I'm ready. I think I need to stay home tomorrow. She fucking said yeah. So...
yikes.
I really have not gone to any of the sex ed that my school provided me. Which is a problem, considering this is my fucking job now.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, I in some ways feel lucky for even the small amount of sex ed that I got, because I went to, like, a secular public school all the way through my years, and so there was no, like, religious overtones that I know a lot of people get of, like, abstinence only, or, like, you're a sinner or a slut if you have sex or whatever. There was none of that, but it was also... like you said, entirely not focused on pleasure. Like, it was entirely focused on the risks of sex and the scary things about sex and all that kind of stuff, which just doesn't make it sound that appealing and also really leaves people in the dark about a lot of stuff. And also, it was segregated by gender. Like, they took all the girls into a separate room and taught them the sex ed stuff separately from the boys, which, like, I understand, I guess, like, sort of the thinking behind that, but I don't think that it was ultimately productive, because it always kind of made me wonder, like, well, what are the boys learning? And, like, you know, is it going to be bad for us that they might be learning different things from what we're learning? And it was just, like, it was a whole
thing. Yeah, we didn't get separated. And, like, also...
Yeah, it was weird, and, like, it made me wonder, like, in retrospect, like, how any, like, trans and non-binary kids might have felt in those situations, even if they weren't out yet, and, like, it's just, I don't think it's necessary, especially not in this day and age.
Yeah, no. I remember it being really focused on just, like, things that could be memorized. Like, I remember it feeling like a vocabulary class. Like, just learn what all of these things mean. It didn't feel like it was relevant to something that would happen in my life at any point.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember having to memorize a lot of anatomical terms.
Yeah.
Which, it's funny, because, like, even now, as a person who works in this industry, I don't use those very often. Like, I know what a vas deferens is and stuff like that, but, like, they really don't come up very much. It would have been a lot better to learn about stuff like orgasms and masturbation and stuff that we actually discuss and that is relevant for the average person on a day-to-day basis. Or, like, even consent. Pretty important.
Yeah, maybe discuss
that. I don't recall that being mentioned at all. What else do you wish you had learned in sex ed?
I wish... So, like, I wish they talked about transness more. Or at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even remember any... And what a great... If they were talking about memorization, why couldn't they have us memorize, like, all of the genders and sexualities? What if we could memorize a list of fetishes? Like, there's interesting stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good words with Latin roots
exactly.
in
them. Learn some things. No, I wish there was, like, more talk about, like, transness and gender and sexuality and what all of that can look like. And honestly, like, even just a passing mention of kink and, like, safe approaches to it. Because I think a lot of people fall into kink and get manipulated really, really easily. And
yes,
it's like, even in high school, I was reading a lot of fanfic and stuff. And the first thing I did was like, all right, where's the weird shit? Like, it was not a thing that I like found out about and then got into. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that I've always been into. So there could have been some tools that would have been valuable to learn in high school.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's pretty well established that making people feel alone and ashamed of their sexuality, whether it be queerness or kink or what have you, just like shoves them further into isolation, which can have really negative effects. I remember, like, this was not touched on in my health classes at all, but I do remember I took a 12th grade philosophy class where there was a discussion of, like, suppressing our natural desires and what kind of damage that can do. And my philosophy teacher spoke about this, like, very elaborate metaphor where he was like, if someone really, really loves country music and they get told all their lives that country music is terrible and they shouldn't listen to it, like, there's all these negative effects that are going to happen. They're going to hate themselves for loving country music and they're going to, like, seek it out in illicit ways and whatever. And it was this, like, very, like, thinly veiled metaphor for, like, queerness or kink or whatever. And I actually feel like I learned more about that from sexual shame than I did from, like, anything in sex ed, for sure.
Yeah, no, that sounds like the teacher's way of being like, I'm gonna teach them a thing. I don't know if I'm allowed to teach them this thing.
Yeah. And, like, on the topic of queerness and transness, I'm thinking about this a lot because of the sex ed crisis that I mentioned earlier that's happening in Ontario. I just wrote a couple of big pieces for it for big publications. And what I feel is really important here is that, like, people with non-normative sexual identities need to hear that there are people like them in the world. And I don't think it's enough to hear about these things on the internet. I think that these things need to be sanctioned in schools and explicitly talked about and mentioned, because there's this weird, like, cognitive disconnect if, like, you know, you know that your identity is legitimate and real because you see people talking about it on Tumblr or whatever, but then it's never mentioned in school. Like, that doesn't feel good. And there are even certain identities that are harder to find on the internet. Like, I spoke to a lot of asexual people recently who, like, didn't know asexuality was a thing until, like, their late teens, by which point, like, all their peers had already, you know, known who they were attracted to and in what ways for quite some time. So it's, like, obviously pretty isolating and potentially really hurtful and damaging to, like, not even know that your identity exists.
Yeah, you can't Google something if you don't even know the word for it, you know?
Right. You're just gonna, like, feel broken and weird, and that's not good for anybody.
Yeah.
What about consent? Like, what do you think sex ed classes should teach about consent? Big question, but...
I don't think sex ed classes should be. I think just school should be. Like, yeah. I think that's, like, a preschool on thing that should be taught. It's not, like, consent isn't just a sex thing.
Right.
Just teach people to have ownership over their bodies.
Yeah.
Like, and respect other people's bodily autonomy.
Yeah. It's such a basic concept, and yet it feels like it's so new in our cultural conversations, and that's, like, really something we should all be ashamed of and working against.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned about this with regards to Ontario, because we just had a thing happen where, like, our premier, Doug Ford, rolled back our sex ed to the one from 1998, which, as you might expect, has no mention of queerness or transness or consent. And at the same time, he's introduced this, like, buck a beer legislation where the minimum price of beer has been dropped to $1. And there was a new ruling that might allow intoxication to be used as a defense for committing sexual assault going forward. So, like, those three things together are not great, because people are not going to know about consent, and they're going to have access to very cheap booze, and there's more, like, legal loopholes for rapists. So, like, education matters a lot, and I'm nervous about this situation.
He sounds like a supervillain.
He is, yeah.
Like, that doesn't sound... You're in Canada. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening up there. Everything's burning down here.
Mm-hmm. I know, we have our own Trump light up here, and it's really distressing. It's
yeah. But that, like... I saw a mention of the buck a beer thing. I didn't really understand what it was. That doesn't sound real.
I know.
It's not...
Well, the thing that's funny is that the beer companies are fighting back against him, because they're like, we can't even produce beer for that cheap, like, especially if it's, like, indie companies, like, little local breweries and stuff like that. And it's, like, one of the reasons that he got elected was, like, a lot of people were really excited about buck a beer. I'm like, if that's your top political concern, like, congrats on your privilege. Wow.
Yeah, and, like, just because the minimum retail for the beer is $1, the beer companies are gonna be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
We can charge $1, we're not gonna.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, sure, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel about sex ed kind of how I feel about math, which is that, like, I learned a lot of things that are not useful to me, and I didn't learn a lot of things that would have been really useful to me. So, you know, I think a thing that might have been useful is to learn, like, how to know if someone is assaulting you, and what to do if that happens. Because I feel like a lot of people I know don't know that stuff and would have to kind of look it up or whatever. And, like, maybe you're not in your best frame of mind at that moment to be looking up that information. And we should all know the numbers for, like, sexual assault crisis lines as well as we know 911. Like, it's kind of weird that we don't.
Yeah.
And I don't think this information should be gendered either. Like, I have a feeling that if classes were segregated by gender, like they were when I was taking these classes, that, like, the classes for girls would focus a lot more on the sexual violence side of things. And, like, we all need to know this. That's just basic for everybody, all humans.
Yeah, and when you're telling women what not to look for, you're telling men what to not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like... If that's your gender concern, both sides still need to be there to hear it.
Yeah.
Like.
Yep.
But also, gender's bullshit, so, like, yeah, you know.
Let's abolish gender.
Let's
abolish compulsory gender.
Yeah. Honestly, though, I feel like that health class should have just been, like, an emotional maturity class.
Mm-hmm.
Like... discussions of consent and communication and relationships and, like, all of that shit that we're all unpacking in our 20s and, like, freaking the fuck out about.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, as we've seen through, like, Me Too and all these related things that are happening, like, consent is such a big and, like, deeply rooted psychological issue that's based in stuff like entitlement and toxic masculinity and, you know, very, very deep stuff in your psyche. And I really don't think that, like, having it mentioned in a couple of classes in high school or whatever is really going to repair all the damage that's happened as a result of, like, things you've absorbed through cultural osmosis up to that point. So, like, you're right that it needs to be an ongoing thing from when we're quite young and holistic and not just about sex.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, your teacher is not necessarily going to be the person you want to listen to if mm-hmm. if they're the first person you're hearing it from. You're going to listen to your friends over your teacher.
Yep, yep, yep.
You're a fucking teenager.
The kink thing is so interesting to me because I've thought about this so much and, like, how I know so many people who were kinky from a very young age and would have felt really, like, normalized if that had been covered in schools, but it's unimaginable to me that it would ever be covered in schools because I feel like people would take it as, well, if you're teaching kids that, like, spanking and stuff is a thing, you're telling them to hurt each other, and I don't really know how we would get around that aside from, like, referring them to outside resources. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever get to a point where there will be, like, a kink unit in your sex ed class. Mm-hmm. But I think, I really, honestly, I just want to see people get to a point where there is passing mention of just, like, and this is a thing some people do.
Yeah.
And more, I'm more concerned about teaching people the skills to screen their mm-hmm. potential partners, and that's a skill that's valuable in the scene and outside of it.
Yeah.
So I think more teaching people, like, the reasoning around that and around interpersonal stuff doesn't have to happen in a kink context, and it can just be, like, passing mention, like, and if you're kinky, this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah, and if we're emphasizing, you know, more communication and more conversations about consent, like, that applies to kinky sex as well as vanilla sex. It applies to all things. So, yeah, that's a good framework for all of us.
Yeah, I just can't imagine seeing, like, a display on the board with someone talking about where on an ass you can hit.
Can we have Dirty Lola come in and teach 8th grade health classes?
Oh my god. Just in the front of the room. Booty meets, everybody.
The best. I also just want to talk about the clitoris, always, but it was mentioned for one sentence in my sex ed, and like I said, I was surprised to hear even that, but for all the time that we spent talking about the penis, that's, like, very little clitoral content, and I need more clit stuff in my life and in the brains of youngins. I certainly wonder if the boys were taught anything about the clit, because a lot of them need to know that, too. It's just, like, it's contributing to the orgasm gap that we continue to treat the penis as this, like, very important thing that we need to study and memorize all the parts of it. And so many people don't even know that the internal clitoris is a thing. So many people don't even know that, like, most people with vulvas need clitoral stimulation to reach orgasm. Like, people are learning this in their 20s, and it's shocking and appalling and not acceptable.
Yeah, I don't even know if they mention the clitoris in my sex ed class. I feel like they must have, but I don't. My sex ed class also gave me more questions than it did answers. I was the person who would hear, like, one little thing and be like, oh, tell me more. But I do remember, like, not knowing where the clitoris was, like, through high school. Like, just no one told me.
Yeah, and, like, I know that this metaphor doesn't really make sense physically and logistically, but, like, can you imagine a cis dude going through high school not knowing where or what his dick was? And, like,
right?
Can you imagine them not talking about the dick in sex ed except in, like, a throwaway sentence? Like, I know that it's not the same thing because dicks are, like, much more visible and, like, much more, I guess, just dynamic.
I'm imagining, but, like, the nervousness of, like, is this, does anyone else have, is this, there is a growth.
But, like,
why is no one talking about this? It's like, just it's... hanging there, man.
Okay,
sometimes,
like,
it moves.
It's funny, but, like, that is literally how so many people feel about their clits. And I know that even I, like, before, like, clitoral pleasure was covered in one sentence, I was kind of like, do other people know that, like, this feels good when you touch it? Or, like, because we're just talking about penetrative sex. And, like, at that age, I had not even really, like, done any penetration on myself because it was of no interest to me. It was not what felt good. It was not what got me off. So I was like, why would I bother with that? Why are we talking about that? Why don't you talk about the things that are applicable to me now, like getting myself off clitorally? Like, it was just like a really absurd omission, and it continues to be a problem, and it's definitely contributing to the orgasm gap, and it's really gross and sexist.
Yeah, I also, like, my sexuality is much more penetration focused, but I remember not knowing much about the clit for, like, an embarrassingly long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember, so you know the Bodies exhibition?
No.
Okay. It's a thing that was at South Street Seaport for a while, and possibly a couple other places, but I went on a field trip with school a couple of times, and I went on my own. It's a museum type thing, basically, with pieces of human bodies, so you can actually see what anatomy looks like. Like, they have the entire nervous system laid out on a big glass thing, so it's really cool that you can see, like, the density of the nerve endings and stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember being in high school in the sexuality room, like, trying not to be the weird dude, like, looking at all the genitals really close, but also being really curious and looking at all the genitals really close.
Yeah.
And it was, the vulva was just on this, it looked like one of those sex toys that's just a disembodied torso, or a disembodied pelvis.
Uh-huh.
Like, not even a torso, just the hips. Oh. And I was trying to look, but not trying to look like I was looking.
Right.
But also trying to figure it out. So I, like, kind of saw where the little arrow to the clit was, but also couldn't tell if that was the front or back of the body. So
our sex ed is a mess, people. We need to fix this.
I was so confused. And then we had to go to the next room.
Ugh, horrible.
And I'm just here like a baby gay, trying to learn things to do to my girlfriend at the time.
Yep. Yeah, the clit, I have just learned more about it over the course of having one, and I'm just angry that no one taught me this shit. Like, you know, I used to think it was a tiny little spot, and then I realized that there was, like, a shaft to it, and then I learned that there was an internal portion, and, like, all this stuff, and it's like, why do we know every detail about the penis? Like, why is it mapped out in great detail in medical textbooks and people don't know fuck all about the clit? It makes me want to throw things. I'm feminist raging right now. I'm sorry, not sorry.
You would think, and, like, obviously it's because men are in science, but you would think they would be more curious about things different from themselves.
Right.
Like, isn't that what science is about? Like, understanding mystery or some bullshit?
Right.
These guys are like, this thing's cool. I want to know more about it.
But the thing that's so absurd to me about it, too, is that, like, men have, like, literally since the beginning of time been trying to figure out women and understand how women work and stuff. And there's, you know, like, pickup artist culture, and there's, like, NLP, and there's, like, all this, like, weird shit that's, like, men trying to understand how to get women to fuck them, basically. And it's, like, just learn shit about the clit. This would help you so much. Why are you not doing this? Like, that's just basic. It's step one. It's step zero. Like, I'm so angry. I'm getting really incensed right now.
I know, I'm enjoying it.
It's a men are terrible week, and this is just firing me up. All right, let's move on, because I don't want to yell about the clit the whole time. I do, but you probably don't want me to. Okay, so you alluded to this a little bit earlier, and I want to know more about this. Where did you go to learn about sex? Where did you get your sex information, and, like, was it good, was it bad? Tell me about that.
I went to books, which is where I went for everything, whenever I wanted to learn anything growing up, and then eventually to the internet when we got it.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to My mom had the, like, Our Bodies Ourselves book.
Yeah.
Cleverly placed on a bookshelf that I could reach, which I'm sure was not an accident. And I used to look stuff up. I also was that kid that looked up dirty words in the dictionary.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And then when I got a little older, I used to go to Borders and, rest in peace, my favorite bookstore, or my favorite bookstore growing up. Mm-hmm. And I used to sit in, like, the love and sex section, and it was in this little corner of the store, and just read stuff there.
That's so cute. Were people weird about that, or were they chill?
I don't know. I was too focused on the books. Like, no one ever really gave me a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, like, get the big tower of books and, like, balance them and try and find, like, a chair and just sit and read all of them.
Yeah. That's so cute. Yeah, I really loved books when I was growing up, too, and I was a big bookworm. So, like, actually, when my mom wanted to have the talk with me, she didn't really have the talk with me. She gave me a book, and she pointed out a specific page that talked about masturbation, because that's what she wanted to address with me that day. But she gave me the whole book, and I read the whole thing, and it was really a great way for me to absorb that information, because I was a big bookworm, and I don't think I would have connected well with having a conversation about it. She also had a book about sexual fantasy and, like, sort of, like, the common sexual fantasies for women. And it was, like, sort of, like, half erotica, half instruction, how you can use fantasies to enhance your sex life and stuff. And I read that whole book so many times. I, like, stole it from her and, like, hid it under my bed. Baby sex nerd over here. And I used to also go, when I got a little bit older, I used to go to the bookstore and buy erotica anthologies. I was just thinking about this the other day and, like, how brave this was of me. Like, this is almost so brave that I don't know if present day me would do this. Just, like, go into a bookstore and buy this thing that, like, I didn't even know if it was legal for me to be buying those things. I still don't really actually know what the legality is of that here, but, I would always, like, throw another book on top of it, just so it didn't look like I was just coming in and buying erotica.
I read a lot of fan fiction growing up.
Yes, same.
And I used to, I've told this story on here before, but we used to go to the school library after school and print out stacks and stacks of stories, and then read them during class, to the point where, during my senior year, there was a paper shortage in my high school, and I'm fairly certain we were involved. Like, tests got canceled and shit, and I was like, sorry, it's my porn.
That's legendary.
So I did learn I learned a lot from that. Not a lot about vulvas, because I read mostly gay porn. So. Yeah,
checks out.
lots about dicks and butt stuff, and blowjobs, which, like, really explains a lot about me.
That's so interesting, because I kind of had the opposite experience, because I was, like, much gayer when I was younger and, like, not really interested in sex with dudes until, like, my late teens. So I was reading almost exclusively lesbian fanfiction and knew a lot about vulvas and very little about dicks. One of my favorite stories to illustrate this is I was once having cyber sex, which is another way that I learned about sex, probably not very effectively. And I was, like, I was probably about 10 years old, which is too young to be having cyber sex, but I was pretending to be older, because I was curious, and I was having cyber sex with this dude who said he was about 14 or 15 or something, and, he said that he was fingering me, and I said, I want to finger you too, and he was like, that's not, you can't do that. And I was like, but why? Like, I want to use my fingers on your genitals, like, why is that not called fingering?
And I mean, you can finger him.
Yes, I can, but that's not what either of us were talking about. What if, like, little 10-year-old sex nerd me was, like, in cyber sex, like, okay, I'm gonna put on a latex glove, I'm gonna lube up with some thick water-based lube, we're gonna do a little bit of introductory anal play.
I remember sitting in art class, and I sat, like, the tables were all attached, and I was, like, a table away from the cool kids, but I could, like, hear whatever was happening while I was doing my own shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I remember one of the boys going after the girls, asking her how many fingers, and I didn't know what it meant, and I was so curious, and I, like, was trying to listen to the conversation, but they were kept getting quieter. But I was like trying to get more information so I could piece together what the fuck they were talking about. And it wasn't like it stuck with me. Like years later, I was like, oh. But I remember that also as almost like this formative thing of like more fingers being an accomplishment. Because I was like, he wants to know. So obviously the answer is higher. Oh, yes.
It all makes sense now why yes. you're a size
and
B.
Now I'm like this. So blame my kid in art class.
The other major way that I learned about sex, which I think was probably the most formative way, is sex podcasts, which is probably why I have one now, TBH. I started listening to Sex is Fun and Open Source Sex when I was probably 12. I don't know. I remember being in middle school and walking around with my headphones in, and nobody knew what I was listening to. And, you know, kids are not supposed to do that. Like, there was a warning at the beginning of every episode of Sex is Fun, like, don't listen to this if you're under 18, because I guess legally they have to say that. We don't have a warning like that. Maybe we legally should. I don't know. But, like, I think that
if
when
you're
I
under 18, shh, go away.
We love you, but... I think, like, those podcasts were really formative for me because they were adults who were sex positive and in some cases kinky and doing, like, ethical non-monogamy things. And they were talking about all of this stuff very casually because it was just, like, a part of their lives. They weren't talking about it as some, like, strange thing that someone they had heard of was doing. Like, it was what they were doing. So they were very natural about it. And I think that that kind of planted the early seeds in my mind of like, oh, it's okay if I'm, you know, kinky or poly or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was helpful for me with that growing up is that, like, the group of kids I hung out with, we were the weird kids.
Yeah.
And we were, like, cool with that and, like, we were a little edgy. Like, we took some pride in that. In being the weird kids. So, like, being the one that was into kinky stuff, being queer, all of that stuff, it just, like, added to my weird cred. So I was like, yeah, sure, I guess I'm like this. So it didn't really feel ostracizing until I got older and was like, oh, this is a thing that makes me different. And, like, that's weird for some people. Interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It, like... At the time, yeah, it made us seem different and weird, but we were cool with that.
Yeah, it's a really positive environment. I similarly went to high school at an art school, so there was just a ton of queer weirdos. I remember I got back from the weekend one day, and I sat down in my art class, and I asked everybody, like, how was your weekend? And this one girl was like, it was great. I got drunk and had a threesome. And we were, like, 17, and I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Goals. I also think, like, a really formative moment for me in this regard was I went to a meeting of my high school's Queer Straight Alliance, and we had a guest speaker in who was Bear Bergman, who is, like, still one of my favorite writers and speakers about sex and gender and a lot of other cool stuff. And Bear had come to my school to read from his new book at the time, which was called Butch is a Noun. And, like, I think I was, like, vaguely aware of the concept of butch and femme before that, but hearing those readings made me feel so suddenly at home in my queerness, because I had always kind of known that I was, like, drawn to women on the kind of more masculine side of the spectrum, but I had never really known that that was, like, a thing, and that that's a common pattern, is this kind of butch and femme duality for some people. And I just felt suddenly so, like, safe and at home in that identity in a way that I hadn't before. And, like, also queer, I was gonna call him Queer Bergman. Bear Bergman gets into, some stuff about kink and about kind of, like, the kinky parts of, like, chivalry and that kind of stuff in his writing sometimes. And that was also very interesting to me then, but I did not yet have the language to identify as submissive, but I think that that really set me on my way. I'm curious, since you're a sex educator and you consume a lot of the work of lots of sex educators, you're sort of a connoisseur, which sex educators have you learned the most from?
Oof. Okay. So, Emily Nagoski blows my mind all of the time.
Yeah.
And I love Alison Moon's Girl Sex 101. Like, those are two of my favorite sex ed books. Mm-hmm. Dr. Liz Powell teaches me a lot about relationships and is just one of those people, like, everything they say, I'm just like, yes, I agree with that. That is a true thing, and that is the most eloquent way you could have said that. How are you like this? So their work is great. I don't know if Andy would identify as a sex educator, but Andy Isenson's talk about anything about, like, gender and stuff is all, and DS and power exchange is always great. Ida Mondelez as well. Mm-hmm. Really, really great. That's all I've got off the top of my head so far, I think.
Okay, yeah. I would agree with a lot of those folks. One of my faves I know that you love her too is Melina Williams Haas.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. I just went and rewatched the documentary about her the other night, The Artist and the Pervert. And the thing that strikes me about her is, like, when I first saw her speak at the Sexual Health Expo in 2015, all I knew was that she was going to be speaking about power exchange, and this woman gets up and she's so commanding and she's, like, in head to toe black leather, and I was just like, oh, well, she must be a dom. And she starts speaking, and she reveals that she's not a dom. She's a submissive. She identifies as a slave. And she has the whole time that she's been in kink, as far as I know. And that was a really powerful awakening moment for me, in the sense that I was like, oh, I can be a submissive woman and also a badass, which, of course, has been hotly contested by, like, the second wave feminism people and stuff like that. But, like, it's so central to my belief system now about all that stuff. And I really think that she was one of the people who taught me that. Also, Sinclair Sexsmith. Like, I feel like I constantly refer to Sinclair's writing. They've written a ton about power and DS and protocol and also gender and kind of the butch femme dichotomy. And especially now that I'm, like, trying to get more comfortable with dominance, I'm referring so much to their writing about, like, burgeoning dominant identity and how to become more confident as a dom and all that kind of stuff. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
Also, more locally, Caitlin K. Roberts is a fave of mine. She's been a friend of mine for years, and recently she's gotten interested in, like, surrogate partner therapy and somatic sex education. And she is, like, basically the person who first got me involved in the sex-positive community years ago, and I really found her inspiring because she was just, like, her website is called tobeaslut.com, and she was just, like, unapologetically slutty, and she talked about, like, how it can be enlightening and really positive to be promiscuous. And now she educates about, like, a whole other bunch of things, like mindful masturbation and stuff. And I just feel like I'm constantly learning from her.
I've also learned a lot of great kink stuff from Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg.
Yes. Love them.
I feel like every time I hear about, like, some new kink or something that, like, I'm like, wow, that's wild. Like, tell me more. Sunny and Ken are who I can go to tell me more.
Yeah.
Like, they will be like, I know five people who are into that. Let me tell you.
I have a friend whose mom is a sex worker. I think she's a professional dominatrix. And I one time was, like, in my friend's kitchen talking about sneezing fetishists and how I've, like, always wanted to write a piece about sneezing fetishists. And her mom was just walking through and she was like, oh, I know, like, three of them. I can hook you up if you ever want to interview some. I was like, you're the best. Okay. I want to end off on kind of a big philosophical question.
Oh, geez.
What do you hope people take away from you as a sex educator or us? What do you hope people learn?
Oh, shit. That sex can just be a thing. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, taboo and secretive, and it also doesn't have to be, like, that wild, crazy, giggly energy that some people, because, which is just wrapped up more in the taboo. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just talk about it like anything else.
Yeah.
It's fine, y'all.
Yeah. I think that the most common lesson that I find myself teaching over and over again is specifically to cis men, and it's that women are people. And it sounds like they should know that, and they should. But like, I feel like so much of gendered media, especially media appealing to straight men who are trying to get with women, just really makes out women to be this alien species who don't respond to logic and are like fundamentally different from men. And like, I really think everybody's sex life improves if you realize that the people you're trying to fuck are like you. Like, they're just humans. You know, they have their own shit going on, and you should approach them like you would want to be approached. Yeah, it's really frustrating to me that so many dudes are like, I don't understand women. It's like they're literally people just like you. Like,
They're just people.
yeah, continue accordingly. Like, I don't know why that's so hard. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks.
Hope you learned something.
Yeah. Hope you learned something. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Been getting some really cute messages on Instagram these past couple days from new followers who say that they found me through the podcast. That's cute. It makes me happy.
Aww.
Also wanted to shout
Yay.
out, we just got named one of Uproxx's top 18 sex podcasts, and that's really exciting.
That was
So,
really cool.
yeah, thank you for that honor. That made me really happy this week. Where's
I
yours
found some
set?
other podcasts in that list that I'm going to try too that I hadn't heard of, so
Oh,
that's
yeah.
cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely don't endorse the whole list because I know that there's someone on there who's a chronic abuser and harasser, and we don't like him. Just on
I
the
was
DL.
sitting in my office reading that article and I like out loud was like,
Fuck
ugh.
that guy. But there's a few people we even know on there. Like, there's the Off the Cuffs boys are on there, and a bunch of other really good podcasts that you should check out. It's a good list.
Yeah.
Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all the information on my workshops at BexTalkSex.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks or by going to thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app, and while you're there, rate and review us. It gets us on more of those top sex podcast lists, which just give me more things to bitch about at my office.
And also be grateful for and happy about.
Yes, and be very happy about. People would stop celebrating assholes. It's fine.
Too
You can also
real.
support us by going to patreon.com/thedildorks and tossing a couple of bucks our way. Helps us keep doing what we're doing and gets you access to cool things like this live recording that we're doing right now.
Where we got very angry for an hour.
We really did. I had fun.
I did too. It was an appropriate amount of anger. Thank you so much to Protodome, who did our theme song. It's called I Want You in My Bedroom. It's on his album Chip Funk, which is at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Hey, I'm looking at the creaking of the leather on the sound waves.
I'm just gonna. It's just the most our podcast thing that you've ever said.
Yeah, well, the other day my friend sent me a thing that was like them. Are you a hoodie, flannel, or leather bisexual? And then it's me, an intellectual, and it's just Jake wearing a hoodie under a flannel under a leather jacket.
I was gonna say, I've seen plenty of bisexuals layering that look. It's a good one. I went to a hypno play party last night, and I didn't see any hypno happening.
What? What happened? How did that go?
We pretty much just, like, sat and watched scenes happening and didn't really talk to anybody.
Fun.
But it was good. I hadn't seen her in a while, so it was good to, like, catch up with her. But there was, like, this really wild scene happening with, like, a domly dom in a suit and a tiny submissive rope bunny person involving, like, suspension and impact and forced orgasm stuff. And we just sat and watched that. We were, like, gonna leave earlier, and we just couldn't stop watching this scene.
That's excellent.
It was really good. This dude literally looked like Christian Grey. Like, he was just walking around all confident in his suit at a play party where, like, people were in, like, corsets and stuff, and he was very businessy.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you can own that, though.
Mm-hmm. Should we start, or should we wait a couple minutes?
We should start soonish. Because I have to finish watching The Incredible Hulk, watch two shorts, and watch some, if not all, of Thor tonight, because I need to get to The Avengers tomorrow, because I want to have an experience and watch it on the big screen, and if I don't, I won't be able to watch any movies while I'm on vacation.
You're such a Virgo.
I have a list. It's really quite bad.
Did you see the Hulk dick that Vixen is making?
No.
The giant, whatever the really big one is that Vixen makes.
The Gambler?
Yeah.
Oh, they're making it in green.
A couple in green. Okay. But like only two.
I thought you were saying they were making something bigger than the Gambler, and I was like,
no.
My heart. I need it.
Not yet, to my knowledge.
Wasn't she having weird relationship stuff last we heard from her?
Yeah, her partner cheated. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the live stream.
Oh, we're on a live stream. That's right.
Can't just bloop into the void.
The pretty one, right?
He's bad. He turned out to be bad. I knew it. And I told her.
The pretty one turned out to be bad.